Today's episode of State Your Line is brought to you by Patrick Carter of Farmers Insurance. If you have to buy insurance, why not buy it from a locally owned agency? With an agent who has lived in Kansas City their entire life and who knows about the community you live in. So instead of buying from a website that supports outside communities, why not buy from an agent that puts money back into your local community? Your money stays in Kansas City when you buy from Patrick Carter of Farmers Insurance. Patrick's been an agent here in Kansas City since 2003, and he knows the city inside and out. Danny, how many agents with an office in Western Johnson County that live in Brookside? Yeah, just one, Patrick Carter. No matter what side of the state line you're on, Patrick can help. Go to his website, kcfarmersagent.com, and click on Contact Me, and Patrick will help you make a smart decision with your insurance. He not only knows a thing or two about insurance, he knows a thing or two about Kansas City. So call 913-248-8861. That's 913-248-Tony Gonzalez, Tim Grunhard, their numbers, 8861, or visit kcfarmersagent.com today. Welcome in to State Your Line, a podcast for Kansas Cityans by Kansas Cityans. We are the Ritz Brothers. Today is
June 16th.
Sorry, I had a moment come through and I was like, I don't know what day it is. All I know is
Go ahead.
What's that? Oh, I was just going to say, I don't know what day it is all the time. I guess it's Monday, and who knows if we're going to have baseball this summer now. So who cares about anything?
Yeah. Well, normally Mondays, a lot of times Mondays are off days. So that would be one way. But yeah, I'm extremely frustrated with everything that's going on in baseball right now. If you don't know, baseball, every other sport has basically found a way to come back. Every other sport has a plan on when they're starting, what the plan, how they're going to finish out the season, the playoffs, everything like that. Baseball, which is the summer sport, is the only one who doesn't have it figured out. Baseball, the summer sport, is the only sport that is not growing at a big rate, and they're the ones who can't figure it out. They had an opportunity to be the only sport playing, and they have completely dropped the ball on it, and it pisses me off. The Royals weren't going to be a good team this year, but I still love watching baseball. It's kind of infuriating.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Again, it's the sport of the summer, and they're the one sport that's like potentially not going to play this summer, which is just a shame. It was a great opportunity to grow the game, possibly. And we are going to talk about this a lot more because we have Sam Mellinger on the show today.
Mellinger.
Did I say it wrong when I introduced him?
No, you said it right when you introduced him, but then you said it wrong later on in the podcast.
Mellinger.
Yeah.
But we have Sam on the show, and we spent a little bit of time talking about baseball and its return or not return. So a really fun interview we were pumped to get. And thanks to Sam for joining us. That was a ton of fun.
But yeah, we talked a little bit more about baseball. And it's just frustrating because, again, baseball is the one sport where literally, and this is what, and Sam's talked about this afterwards, but literally the average age of baseball fans goes up 1 year every single year. So baseball is not getting new fans. And a lot of people think of like golf as the old guys sport, but golf, it has attracted the young fans, and they took advantage of being the only sport playing. Because one, it's easier to get golfers to play. There's no union or anything like that, and you can just kind of the social distancing is pretty obvious in golf. But but two, they've attracted younger fans. They have an awesome young a lot of awesome young players who are superstars. And me and my friends, like, we talk about golf a lot. And golf, which is in your head, you would think, like, oh, this is an old man sport. It's actually gotten, you know, it's got a younger audience. And baseball just can't do it. And they just keep shooting themselves in the foot. And this whole response to COVID is a perfect example of them having an opportunity and not taking advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like my Mr. Deeds reference in the interview that you guys are going to have to listen to, but was very disappointed that Sam's never seen Mr. Deeds at all.
Did he say he'd never seen it?
Yeah, he goes, nope, never seen it. I was like, oh, come on, man. And I didn't have time to go at him for missing that classic. But yeah, we'll get into that more in the interview. So I say we check it into openings and closings for the week.
Sure. Let's start with openings, because closing is really going to just depress the crap out of me. And if we're... Well, let's just get to openings first. Yeah. Let's start on a positive note.
Oh, okay. All right.
Opening, and this is not opening like this week. We just missed it. So it's one of those things that I think it opened like back in March or February. And it opened, so it's called Soap Refill Station. The Soap Refill Station. It's in Waldo. It's right by Johnny Caw's. So maybe you've seen it. I thought I saw it pop up like right before COVID. So I thought it was like a government run store where you could go and get like free soap or free hand sanitizer or stuff like that. Because it does have a very, it's called Soap Refill Station. It's not called like, you know, anything boutique-y or, and that's kind of the point of it. But I thought it was like a government sponsored place where you could go and get free soap, but that's not the case. It is a store where you can basically go and buy all different types of cleaning supplies in bulk in your own container. So you just like bring in your own container, your own reusable container, and then you shop their shampoo, you shop their conditioner, you shop their hand soap, you shop their... laundry detergent, and then you just fill up your container with however much you want, and you pay by weight. So obviously the idea is to reduce the amount of plastic bottles that you're going through with face soap and hand soap and shampoo and laundry detergent and all that good stuff. So reduce those and give you like a really high quality product just in your own container. I'm all in on this. I love the idea. I just like learned about it today when researching it for the show, and like I'm almost out of body wash. I'm gonna go up there. I'm tired of like trying to find a body wash. I'm just tired of shopping for body wash.
I think it looks pretty cool, and also there's the oil bar too that comes with like all these masks, detox mask, anti-aging masks. I'm a big mask guy. Try to keep my face looking sharp, you know. And so I'm excited to see just really everything they have to offer, and I can already see it. There's so many mason jars involved with this. It's going to be so Instagrammable.
It's very Instagrammable, because it's like, one, you're doing something good, but I think they have like high quality products. So they don't manufacture their own soap. They get like brands that come in there, but they sell it to them wholesale, and then you buy it just without the logo on it, because, you know, as we know, like a lot of times half of what you're paying for is just to have the logo on whatever it is you buy. So they have like other brands. But yeah, I also love like oil bar. Like why is it a bar?
I don't know. Cause you know, you go up there, ask the oil bartender for a mask.
Like that's outrageous, but it is definitely intended to look like more clinical and more, industrial, because the logo, like I said, I mistook it for a government sponsored like refill station, but it looks pretty sweet, man. I mean, I buy the cheapest body wash at the store, like bottom shelf. Mm-hmm. And same with shampoo. Same with shampoo, same with conditioner. So I'm gonna go here and compare and see what we got. I'm excited to check it out.
All right. That's the soap refill station in Waldo. It's now open. Closing.
Been open for a couple months, but
yeah. Well, we gotta talk about these closings now.
Well, hold on.
Okay.
If we're the first people to deliver this news to you, I want to apologize because both of these closings hit me like a brick. So apologies in advance if we're the first people to bring you this news. Go ahead, mm-hmm. Kevin.
Well, I guess I'll just deliver it both at the same time. Nara, the sushi restaurant, will be closing. And same with Boru Ramen and Boru. Waldo. Boru Ramen and Waldo will also be closing, which, you know what the worst part is?
What? You never tried Boru?
I haven't been to either of them.
What? Well, now you'll never get the chance, dude.
Oh, I know, man.
Now you'll never get the chance.
You only want it when you can't have it.
Yeah, it's like Sunday and Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
That is a tragedy. I could have sworn I made you go to Boru once.
I've had ramen, but not Boru. Boru.
Yeah. Damn it. So, Boru, I loved ramen. Like, I didn't know I loved ramen until I went to Boru. I tried it and I like fell in love with it legitimately. Like, I was like, this is one of the best things I've ever eaten. I tried every other ramen, place in Kansas City since then, and I still think Boru was the best. And so this is heartbreaking to me. It was really good. And they played Kevin in the store. They would play like 90s music videos. Like all the TVs would be on like 90s music videos. And so you'd catch like an Alanis Morissette music video or like Chili Peppers or something like that. While eating ramen. And it was just an awesome place. I'm so pissed. And the owner of the, you know, they announced it on Facebook and it got like a ton of reaction. And the owner made a statement that said, like, because of our fans, he said, quote, the legacy will live on. What does that mean, Andy? Like, the legacy will live on, like, in my brain? Or are you going to open up just like a smaller shop? Because am I getting ramen or not? Like, you can't tease me like that. That's just like, that's just like, you know, your grandparent died, maybe.
Yeah. The legacy will live on.
Yeah. Like, what does that mean? The legacy will live on? I need to know.
I think that people will be talking about it. I don't know. I don't think I will be talking about it, but I guess I never went there. And then, I mean, something will move in and it'll be like, what did that place used to be again?
Shut up. How dare you?
It was a Kennedy's.
The dirt isn't even dry. The dirt isn't even dry on the grave. And you're talking nonsense about it, and I won't stand for it.
Oh, man. Well, it is sad to see that the effect that, you know, all of this has had on local restaurants. I mean, we've talked a lot about a lot of locally owned restaurants who just haven't been able to make it through this. So it is sad to see that. But I'm also thinking my wheels are turning. You know that idea I have for the brunch? A brunchy? That's a good spot. I'm thinking about it. I might have to go see, you know, what rent's costing there. See if I can open a restaurant. Pretty sweet.
Nara closing too. It's rough because I saw Carrington Harrison, who has a show on 610 Sports here in Kansas City. He said that Nara is definitely like a top five date spot in Kansas City. Like everyone has been on a date to Nara. And man, they had Wednesday nights was like ladies night, and it was like half price sushi rolls. And obviously, you know, it's available to everyone. So it was like one of the best cheap sushi places in the city. And there's not a ton of those. And like there are better sushi places than Nara. But as far as like being in the crossroads and being somewhere where you can like get a drink and eat some sushi and have fun, like more of a fun, loud atmosphere. Mm-hmm. It was really the only one of its kind. So I'm shocked Nara didn't survive this. It's devastating. Devastated.
Well, I mean, sushi to go has never sounded that appetizing to me, so I think that's hard to continue to provide that, you know, through only to go orders. So, man, that's a bummer though. Also, I never went on a date there because I've always heard eating sushi on a date, like the way you have to eat sushi, is awkward anyways. I think it's awkward to try to have conversation through eating sushi. So that just, I think, shows that guys are dumb and take girls to eat sushi on first dates, which I think that's a tough one. It's a tough one. All right. So that is openings and closings for this week. All right, let's move into a little what we try this week. I was hungover yesterday a little bit and tried Game Day Wings over off of Warnell.
Yeah.
And yes, got the jumbo wings and fries. They come in the big, you know, the whole wings still put together. The wings there are very like crispy. So okay, they've got a little breading on them, a good crunch in them. They toss them in a delicious buffalo sauce.
Ooh. So and they're crunchy and buffalo?
They're crunchy and buffalo and big too. So, I mean, with it being kind of crunchy, I worried about it being maybe, I don't know, too greasy or something like that. But nice, fresh, good crunch on the bite. Delicious sauce. Fries were good to be paired with it. And then just looking at their menu, I mean, I might, you know, have them cater like the next football watch party or something. They make it really easy to just buy a ton of wings and sides and all of that at once. So would recommend Game Day Wings.
It's on
like Game Day Wings and Catfish. And
is it on 85th and
is like 89th and Warnell, a little farther south?
Yeah. I've driven by it and I've always wanted to try it. I've heard it's good.
It's good. It's very good.
Well, I'm glad you ate there. Yeah, we said this week we were going to eat somewhere, a black-owned restaurant. Game Day Wings. I'm glad we both didn't go there because we didn't talk about it. But because that sounded, that was like high on my list of places I was going to go. But I had a friend reach out to me and said, like, don't even think about it. Go to Nisi's Restaurant. Nisi's Restaurant is on 64th and Troost, so like right by my house. And I was told that their brunch and breakfast was really good. So we ordered breakfast from there, and I kind of did like a smorgasbord of things. I got the chicken and waffles because that's like their main menu item. The chicken was wings, which I was surprised because...
Interesting. Game Day does that too, wings and with their chicken and waffles.
Yeah, it's not something that you can do a combo bite of. Like, I always like combo bites. And so, like, when I've had chicken and waffles in the past, they've been like a thigh or a breast or something like that, where you can use a fork and knife and kind of get a little bit of the chicken, a little syrup, a little butter, a little waffle. So I wasn't able to do that really. So I was just kind of eating the wing and then going straight for the waffle. It was really good. The wings were really crispy. And I didn't realize this, but like syrup is just a good topping for a chicken wing. So I just poured syrup on everything in the chicken and waffles, basket, and it just like basically was eating wings for breakfast covered in syrup. So that was good. The waffle was good. We also ordered some pancakes and we ordered a breakfast sandwich with bacon, egg, and cheese. Both the pancake was really good. I thought the pancake was better than the waffle, but the chicken and waffle combo was really good. But the pancakes, they like have a little burn to them, like a little crisp, you know, like the griddle was really hot. I love that little like char on it. I don't know. It just reminded me of like Criss cakes or something like that. It really took me back. Nisi's Restaurant right now, they're doing limited seating. But they do a really good job of call-in orders. So you can call in and then you just wait in your car and then they come out, ask you the name of the order and then go and grab it for you. So that's Nisi's on 64th and Troost. Really, really good.
Nice. So that'll do it for the front half of the show. And as we said, next up, Sam Mellinger.
Mellinger.
Mellinger. All right. Today we are joined by a special guest, Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star. Sam, I guess where I want to start, I'm curious because I was going to ask you this in the kind of the pre-game meeting we were having.
Right.
You featured us on your Mellinger Minutes, and I was like pretty stoked about that. How did you even hear about us? Did a friend, did you Google it? Where did that come from?
I think the first time that I heard you guys show, I think it was Mick Schaefer. I think it's when you had Mick on there. And I think Mick like retweeted it or whatever. And that's how I came across it. And I've been looking for, you know, sort of Kansas City stuff and was kind of in a drought, to be honest with you, at that time. So checked it out, enjoyed it. You said this is 59?
Yeah.
Is that right? I can't say I've listened to all 58, but I've listened to a bunch and I've enjoyed them all. You guys do a good job.
Yeah, thanks. Because I mean,
I appreciate you having me on.
That helped us out. Not as much as like when we had an Instagram influencer on. So you don't quite have that pull in Kansas City yet. You know, the Star, it's an old medium, but you know, Instagram, Sam, check it out.
There you go. Yeah, incredible. I'll check it out.
but where I really wanted to start was with baseball. I miss it so much. I really want it to be back. But how optimistic are you about things actually happening and getting started?
Well, dude, I think it'll be back. I think they'll play big league games. But the thing that I get, like, just a combination of just, like, sad and frustrated and a little bit of angry is just the way that they've screwed this whole thing up, like, from the beginning. And I kept kind of thinking, like, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. And then you talk to people in the game and they feel like it's six times worse than I ever could have imagined. And they're like, maybe this is all just freaking out. They'll figure it out, but it sure as hell doesn't seem like they're figuring it out. And the only reason I say that there'll be games is that the commissioner, they've got the right to just implement a season and there's nothing really that the players can do about it unless they went on strike, which isn't going to happen. So they'll have games, but if it's like a 54 game season or something, like what are we talking about, you know? And not to mention, but like also the players are so pissed off at the owners are pissed off at the players. And this is like, you know, they've got a CBA to do after the end of next season. It's just going to be way worse now than it would have been if they could have acted like adults.
Yeah. I thought it was just so interesting that, you know, the owners are asking for, you know, not only the to have the prorated salary, but then also, you know, take less than that. I feel like I would go like the Mr. Deeds route. Did you see that movie where like he kicks out the star quarterback because he wants more money? And then the guy's like, well, if we do worse, do we pay you less money? Yeah. So I feel like the players need to go in there and be like, hey, if you want us to take less money, then how about when your revenues are really good, we all just get more money?
Well, that's the thing too. And, you know, look, I like Scott Boras. I know most people don't. And I get it, but you know, he said something pretty profound. I thought, like, the owners want to privatize the profits and socialize the losses because they've had like record revenue for I don't know how many years in a row. And it's not like Whit Merrifield's getting a Christmas bonus from that. You know what I mean? Like the owners are just keeping it. And now they're going to lose. I mean, they're going to lose 2/3 of a season, but they could have lost just like 50 games and they act like, you know, that they can't pay for their next meal or whatever. It's pretty ridiculous. Either that's a bald lie, like, which I think it is. Or the owner should really be embarrassed that losing, you know, less than half a season potentially is what it could have been, you know, puts him in this situation.
You know, what is probably going to be worse too, is all the like takes and opinions we're going to have to listen to about like asterisks on champions at the end of these seasons. And like, you know, if they award a Cy Young or an MVP award, like there's just going to be columns and conversations forever about like, oh, does that count as Mike Trout's fourth MVP or should it not count in the number of MVPs that he has? And, you know, does this champion get an asterisk, you know, by it? Like that's going to be exhausting as well.
Yeah, no, totally. And cause that's what happened in the, was it 99 or whenever the NBA had their shortened season and people were wondering about
the Spurs,
you know? Yeah. Yeah. Which is a little bit of, I mean, the Spurs are like a worthy champion, right? It's not like, you know, the Charlotte Hornets were going to win or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, it's, but all that stuff's real. And that's why like, I mean, baseball, that's part of the deal, right? You play 162, and I don't think they should play 162, you know, like 154, 148, you know, something like that. Yeah. It should be a little bit shorter, but not like this. And but you know who's happy is the Houston Astros. Like, people aren't talking about them. You know, like that is yeah. the only people that this is good for.
I know. I know that you have done a feature on John Sherman and talked about the ownership group before. What do you think they're thinking right now? I mean, it's got to be the worst time ever to buy a team. But it also makes me nervous as a fan that, like, we're a small market and we just got to be a smaller market. Should I be worried about, like, 3 to 5 years, like, for the next 3 years, that, like, Sherman and his investment team aren't going to want to spend money? And, like, and this is probably not unique to Kansas City, but I'm a Kansas City fan. So, like, they're going to use this season and this year as an excuse for not spending money for 3 to 5 years in the future.
They could. Do you guys, that's my, there's our 4-year-old. He just walked in. So pardon me if we're,
he can jump on the pod if he's got buddy, spicy tapes.
Say hi. No. Okay. So no, I think that stuff is legit, right? Like, that, you don't have 17 investors unless you need 17 investors, you know? And that's a thing that, that people in baseball, people who work for the Royals included, and other teams are wondering, you know, like, how much money does this team, does this group of investors really have if they kind of had to stretch a little bit? But he's a blank slate, right? John Sherman. And we don't, you know, he's got, like, damn near a perfect reputation around town. Like, you find anybody that knows him, and it's not just he's a good person. It's like over the top, you know.
Danny knows him now. Danny's yeah. gonna meet him. I'm really jealous.
Yeah, I mean, he does seem like a solid dude too, you know. And but I look, like, I think that all we have to work on, because that's who he was, like, as a private citizen, business owner, whatever. But what, let's be honest, like, what we really care about is, like, what's he going to be like as the Royals owner? And so it's a blank slate, but the stuff that's being filled in is all pretty positive. You know, like, mm-hmm. when they decided not to cut any minor leaguers, and when they decided to pay them all in full, which a lot of teams have a lot more money, including the freaking Dodgers and Cubs and a lot of teams weren't doing. And also, nobody got a pay cut. If I understand this correctly, nobody got a pay cut except the very top level, you know, like, sort of Dayton Moore, Kevin Ulick, you know, that VP kind of level. So for them to do that, I thought two things. It was such a, as resounding as it could have been in that moment for John Sherman and his team, you know, confirmation that they are going to be about what they said they're going to be about, which is invest in people. This is a civic responsibility. All those things. I mean, that was because, and they had every excuse, right? Like, they haven't had years and years of all these profits there. Mm-hmm. You know, other than the Marlins, I think this is right, but other than the Marlins, every 28 other Major League Baseball teams have been owned at least since 2012. So every other, those 28 groups have had, again, years of record revenue to fall back on. John doesn't have that. John bought a thing for $1 billion. I don't know what it's worth now, but he sure as hell could not sell that for $1 billion. And so he's the only one with a legit excuse to start cutting, and he didn't do it. So I think it's a confirmation about what he's about. And it's also kind of a shame for these other 28, you know, I feel like they're getting shown up a little bit.
Yeah. I remember we talked to Alec Lewis like last year, and I wanted to talk to Alec Lewis had expressed my frustrations with Dayton Moore and how things had gone. And he was yeah. very quick to point out just how well he runs an organization compared to other teams and how he does the right thing. And it was funny because I think he was calling out the Mets, who were a mess at the time last year.
Oh,
and
for sure.
I think like Vargas was trying to fight that reporter at the time. And like, yeah, just things weren't going well. And then that thought came back to me when the Royals announced that they would be paying all the minor leaguers. It was like, okay, well, it makes sense why Dayton Moore is so yeah. respected and still has a job after losing 100 games again. You know, so I thought that said a lot about him too.
Like, Dayton's reputation amongst the people that work for him, especially, but also the people that he works with around baseball with other clubs. I mean, it's a 10 out of a 10, you know. I mean, and he is I know him better than I know just about anybody else sort of in Kansas City sports. And he's what he says he's about, you know, like that stuff. It's not an act. It's not phony. It's not holier than thou. It's not, you know, that is legitimately who he is. And he's the one that's getting a lot of credit, right, for how they're treating the minor leaguers. But my point is that John still had to okay it.
He had to write the check, yeah.
Yeah, that's not Dayton's money mm-hmm. that they're spending, right? So he is different. I've referenced this a couple times, but there's a player, and this was, you know, I can't like say who it is because I talked to him about it afterward, but he said Dayton's biggest problem is that he's the only one out of 30 general managers who gives a shit about players. And the point was like the other ones are all, it's just a commodity, right? Like it's a war, you know, wins above replacement, not an actual like war, like a battle. You know, they're just a number and a cost, and Dayton treats them like people. And, you know, in a weird way, I think that's been an advantage in the last week or so. I think you're seeing a lot of the best undrafted, you know, college players or high school prospects signing with the Royals. Instead of some other clubs. So maybe that'll be an advantage. But it's just, he is seen as different than the other 29 for sure.
Yeah. I think that, and I heard Theo Epstein say it once, in an interview, but he was talking about like, everyone has all the analytics now, like,
right.
We have all the information. No one is like, has an advantage really when it comes to analytics anymore. So that's an even playing field. So now, like really what Moneyball is finding the inefficiencies.
Totally.
Not war or on-base percentage or anything. It's finding inefficiencies. And Theo Epstein's point was like the new inefficiency is caring about your players. It's like giving a shit who they are, caring about clubhouse mentality. Mm-hmm. And it feels like Dayton and Yost were, again, a little ahead of the game there. And obviously Ned had and Dayton both like had their issues when it came to actual, like, you know, stats and analytics and stuff like that. But I think caring about the guys is what gave us a championship in 2015. Is that something you hear from other people in baseball that like they think, you know, Dayton being the way he is an advantage that the Royals have when it comes to winning baseball games?
Yeah,
it's kind of tough to say because we've had a couple of bad seasons now.
No, right. But what I think about is that team, and not just 14, 15, but 13 and even 12, that our time disaster, like those guys like genuinely loved each other. Like they came up together and they stories on buses. And like, I mean, the way that like Gerard Dyson and Eric Hosmer interacted, like cannot be faked. You know, like they genuinely loved each other. The way that Lorenzo Cain and Sal Perez interact, like, I mean, there's a genuine sort of love between those guys. And I know it's a business, and so this is kind of naive, but, you know, baseball games are won in the margins. You know, I mean, it's just tiny, tiny little edges that add up. And that's a major – and there's other stuff, too. It's not just because they all, for the most part, got along. I mean, they there's somebody in the Royals front office that I have a lot of respect for, and but man, I pissed him off one time when I said that the Royals were sort of a money ball team, and my point was that I'm glad you know, Danny, that you just mentioned, like, it's not money ball is never about like walks and home run. It was about valuing what other people aren't valuing, market inefficiencies. Mm-hmm. And the Royals, in a time where everybody's hitting home runs and everybody's accepting strikeouts and people aren't worried about defense as much, the Royals invested a lot of time, money, and energy into athletes who could cover ground, guys who put the ball in play and could put pressure on a defense. So there was some really, to me anyway, like just the baseball nerd side of me, like some really fascinating ways that they won actual games. But there's no question that they also, that was backed by, you know, this almost just like a literal like college fraternity that just was having fun every night mm-hmm. together.
Yeah. I love how you've done it twice now, like where you've told stories and just kept the person anonymous. Like you're such a journalist. You just like can't help it. It's like, yeah, a clubhouse official, a player who I won't name. It's like, it's just in your blood. Did you always know that you were going to be a sports journalist growing up, and high school. And I mean, I think I read that you started working for the Lawrence Journal World in high school or something like that. Did you always know, like, I'm going to be a sports writer, I'm going to be a journalist?
I did. And the reason that I'm not mentioning these two guys, and it's funny, I have done it twice. The one was a conversation that I heard kind of secondhand. And then I asked the player about it. And he goes, well, that's not how I'd want to be quoted. But then he explained like what he meant. And it was basically that Dayton's the only one out of 29 that gives, or out of 30 that gives a shit.
You don't have to explain yourself, Sam.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. and the other one, he just called me pissed off about something I wrote. But no, I did. It was a weird, you know, I was like probably, I mean, anywhere from 8 to 12 years old when I first kind of thought that this is what I wanted to do, I would have believed you. Like, you know, we grew up, I grew up in Emporia at first, and we had four newspapers delivered to our house. And so that was just like sort of what my house looked like. I mean, there was just a ton of newspapers on the kitchen table, and I didn't give a crap about like anything but the sports, right? Not even the comics when I was a kid. It was just always about the sports. I just always thought that was cool. And then I started to think about like, wow, these are people that like actually get to do this, and this is their job. I like to write. So it's just what I wanted to do. And I think my mom never like took it seriously, really. And but then you're right, like when I was 16, and I always say this, and we had moved to Lawrence by then. And my aunt had worked at the Journal World. And so she talked to somebody and they were going to let me like basically hang out in the newsroom for a summer not get any money, you know, it was very unpaid basically just do what nobody else wanted to do. And it was the day, and I always say this, like it wasn't the day that I turned 16, I took the car that I could finally drive and I drove over to my girlfriend's house to try and impress her. She's now my wife. And then the second day, so May 16th, I drove into the Lawrence Journal World and just did whatever the hell nobody else wanted to do, which that summer included like hand counting this ridiculous poll that they ran on which comics the readers of the Journal World wanted to keep. I mean, it was a lot of terrible stuff. And I think my mom wanted me to do it. This is me in hindsight. I didn't realize it at the time, but my mom wanted me to do it because she wanted to get this like sports writing thing out of me. Like that's not a real thing that people do. Like just, you know, you're going to go to law school or you're going to start a business or you're going to go work for some company or whatever. And it just like reinforced. And so like the next summer they sent me to like some American Legion games or like, you know, whatever. And it just built from there. And it just like, what I didn't want, and I don't know if this is like part of my personality, but I was terrified that I would get to my junior or senior year of college, or worse yet, be 25 years old. And the profession that I thought I wanted, now I don't want to do it. And so now your choices are you either keep working a job you don't want, or you kind of have to start over. Does that mean you have to go back to school? Like I just didn't want any of that. So I just wanted to be as sure as I could that this is what I wanted to do. And it was, but like in the meantime, by like really testing that theory, if this is what I really want to do, I got a lot of experience, you know, and I got, you know, to use a sports analogy, I got a lot of reps, you know, and it really helped. I mean, it really, you know, helped give me confidence that A, I wanted to do it, and B, that maybe I could.
You're clearly not a millennial, because like being 25 and wanting to start over your career is like exactly what us millennials want.
I know, right? Yeah. My sister kind of did that. My sister, she's brilliant. My sister is wicked smart, as they might used to say. But anyway, she didn't have any idea what she wanted to do until she was about 24, 25. And it worked out for her. I mean, she's got like a great job and all that stuff. But I didn't know if I could deal with that sort of uncertainty. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to pick my path. Like, this is it. Let's go. Let's do it.
It also sounds like the plot of like every 80s or 90s movie where like the kid goes to the company, works in the mail room, works his way up, like meets his wife. Like, you know, in the 80s movie, he'd like have an affair with like the executive's wife or something like that. But it's definitely the plot of something.
I know. It's corny, man. I know it's a weird this doesn't happen, you know, like I got lucky in a lot of ways. I mean, just pure like luck. Like, people were in the right place at the right time for me and all that. But you know, there was still a lot of, I had to give up a lot of like Friday nights with my friends to go cover some crappy high school game and stuff like that. So, but it's all good, man. It's been great.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I had a question, cause I wanted to ask somebody who, you know, writes columns for a living. I had a really, really bad Patrick Mahomes take at the draft, and I did all this research and I found out that the last, like at the time, 6 of 7 of the Super Bowl winning quarterbacks were really good in college at winning football games. So I made the connection that Mahomes wasn't going to be a winner because he didn't win in college, right? And now every year, somebody finds it on Twitter and I catch hell for it again. I've denounced it so many times. I've said I was wrong, but it keeps coming back to bite me. Do you have something like that out there that you feel like no matter what, you just can't escape a take that you had that has just followed you around?
100%. I don't know what
I know
it
a couple.
Is. I mean, you guys can hit me with it, but I might be like a you know, like a cornerback where it's just like next play. You know, like I got burned. I fell down. The guy was wide open, and I gave it up. But then I forget about it. But I mean, I know I've had those.
You had some rough. And you were probably trying to explain some things away at the time, but the Tyreek Hill draft pick.
Yeah.
I mean, you said outside of the personal issues, like he's just going to be a bad football player.
Yeah.
And,
no, I thought he was a punt returner. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you were like, he's not dominant in Division II. So outside of everything else, Tyreek Hill is just a bad football player.
For a return specialist. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I do remember that now. Yeah, so there's, you're ruining my next play mentality here.
Yeah,
I remember, but his coach at I forgot the name of the school. The D2 school,
was it West Alabama?
West Alabama.
West Alabama. Yeah, yeah. I remember, like, after Tyreek had played a little bit, and sort of like, you know, oh my god, like this guy can track the ball, and he's strong, and he's only 5'8" or whatever, but he can go up and get it. All these things, and I remember like somebody called that West Alabama coach. Because he had played predominantly running back at West Alabama and was like, hey, man, like why wasn't he a receiver in college? And his answer was basically, yeah, that's on me. I should have had him at receiver.
That's great. But do you ever get frustrated with like the way sports media is these days? Like I read – a lot of your stuff and you're like a rational, reasonable, give like just mild takes based off of facts and reason. And that's not how you get paid anymore. Like you make money by putting out clickbait articles and by saying outrageous things that clearly you don't believe in, right. But you just say it just to turn the pot, I guess. But does that frustrate you? Do you ever just want to be like, all right, screw it, I'm putting out this article that says, like, you know, Mahomes is more accomplished than Tom Brady already or something. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
you did put him number 3 on your list of most influential Kansas Cityans in sports of all time, which I think got a lot of people fired up. But I mean, do you ever want to just like give a spicy take just to see what happens? Or frustrated with media in general?
Well, those are two very different questions.
Yes,
frustrated with media in general. Absolutely. We could talk about that if you want, but the other one, the temptation, not really. And it's not, look, like I can't do that. Like mm-hmm. I think I'd suck at it. First of all, I think that I would be fired. Like, I don't think that would end well if I tried to, like, play this game where I'm, like, you know, firing off the stuff that I don't really believe just because I think it's the right column to write at the right time or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, it, that's not, like, a moral thing. Like, I'm not, you know, God bless, you know, Skip Bayless, right, and all the money that he's made. But that's just – I just can't do that. I can't mm-hmm. do that. And I think that I hope this comes off the right way. If I'm any good at what I do, I hope that a significant chunk of that is because people believe me when I say something that people believe that, you know, well, this guy's not, I've read him before, and this is not like some unreasonable person that's just going to say something to piss somebody off. Like, this is what he believes. I may disagree with it. I may think he's an idiot, whatever. I may think he's dead wrong, but I know that he at least believes it. And that's, if I hope that that's something that I have, and I think that it is, and something that I guard with my life, you know what I mean? Cause I feel like that's what I have. And I can't do that other stuff. And I don't necessarily like, I certainly don't envy him.
Yeah.
But if that's another way that somebody's going to make a dollar or whatever, you know, good for them if there's a market for it. But it's just that I can't do it, man. Like, literally can't do it.
Did you, and this can be one of those questions that you don't have to answer, but like, did you know Whitlock when he was working for the Star? And do you think he's, I mean, I feel like he's just kind of turned into that now.
Yeah. I knew him a little bit. So when I started at the Star in 2000, and he, like my first 5 years, I think, I covered high schools. And then from 2006 to 2010, I was doing baseball. Well, Jason doesn't do much with high schools. Jason doesn't do much with baseball. So I didn't work with him all that often. We hung out a few times, like not me and him, but just kind of in a group. He was always very cool to me. He was always, you know, you can't, especially if you're a high school writer, like you can't pay for anything around Jason. He was always, you know, treated us like we belonged. You know, I can't say anything bad about the way that he treated me or basically anybody else except for the people he worked for. And I know that, you know, he treats people, you know, sort of if there's a hierarchy, yeah, you know, at the Star, I guess, like the people that are below him, he treats really well. The people that are above him, I think he's a pain in the ass. At least that's what he was, you know, back then. I do think Jason does that sometimes of what I'm talking about of, you know, saying something because he thinks it's the right thing to do. I don't mean this as, I'm going to walk over here and let my dog and she's scratching at the door, but I can't say that, I don't mean this like an insult or whatever, but, I just mean it factually that I don't follow Jason that much anymore. I don't watch that show. Which I guess he's not on now, right? Like, I
think he got fired
a couple of weeks ago. So, and again, I don't mean that like screw Jason. I just mean like, wasn't my thing. I thought he was really good when he was here, and that he became less of a columnist and more of a, you know, talking head kind of guy. And just it wasn't for me. So, but I do think that he's done that for sure. I do think that he's done that sometimes, and he's certainly not alone. You know, and again, I don't follow these people all the time, so this is probably unfair. But I think that Skip Bayless, who I mentioned, I think that, yeah, you know, a lot of the big names like Colin Coward, I mean, you know, a lot of these people do that. And, you know, again, God bless them. They're playing the game. They didn't make the rules. They're playing by it. And maybe if I could make a ton of money. There's a really good story on Clay Travis. Did you guys see this about how, like,
yeah, I did.
He used to be one thing, and then he sort of turned into this other thing.
I read that whole thing. It was a good read.
Yeah, and yeah, again, like, God bless him. You know, it's a free market, and he's making a lot of money. But I just, you know, I couldn't do it. And again, not like morally, I wouldn't want to. But this is just like literally, if I tried to do that, I would be so bad at it. So I just, yeah, I'm not going to mess with him.
Well, I was listening. I read Whitlock's article about joining Clay Travis and like his whole media that he has going. It's just so interesting. I found myself sitting there reading it, hearing him say, I want sports and politics out of it and not to mix. So I'm going to start writing more fearlessly about how sports and politics mix. And I'm just like, okay, well, do you want them to mix or do you just want your opinion to mix in there? And so it's interesting, but is that just the new kind of sports media where, like, because I don't ever see sports media stopping talking about, you know, the intersection of sports and politics. Is that something that we just kind of have to get ready to experience for the rest of our lives watching sports and being a fan of sports?
I don't know, man. That's a really good question, but
because athletes aren't going to stop talking about it. I don't see that.
Right. Stopping. I think that's going to increase and then, coming up. I do believe
The Oklahoma State thing today.
Yeah, I did see that. Look, I didn't see what Jason wrote today. I heard that he was joining Clay, mm-hmm. but like sports and politics shouldn't mix, so I'm going to join Clay Travis is a bold take.
That's what I thought too.
What he wrote, man, that doesn't make sense.
Listening to him on the podcast because I wanted to hear why he was joining, and that's kind of where I boiled it down to, and I was like, well, that's weird.
Yeah. 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 I mean, look, again, that wouldn't be for me. Clay Travis is one of the themes I think we mentioned a couple minutes ago. But I do think, like, I've always tried, if you're talking about, like, sports and politics and media and stuff, like, I have always tried to keep politics out as much as possible. You know, like, I guess in some ways I kind of think about, like, what, if I was a sports fan, if I had a real job and I was a sports fan in Kansas City, like what would I want from the person who had my job? And that's kind of what I try to do. And I wouldn't want like to be preached at, right? Like I would want somebody to tell me something I didn't know, make me think, maybe make me laugh, like whatever. And so that's what I try to focus on. But you know, Kevin, you just said it, like this is not going away. Mm-hmm. Right. Like more and more, you know, Black Lives Matter, especially, you know, all this stuff is going to be more and more into sports. I mean, you just wait till whoever kneels or doesn't kneel. Are they going to still play the anthem? Are they just going to punt it, you know, so they don't have to deal with it? Whatever. You know, this is, you know, there's keep politics out of it. But there's certain moments where it's important, you know, like politics is speaking. I mean, they're. When does one start and the other stops? Like, and I think that we're in one of those spots right now for sure.
Yeah. I'll tell you, you were talking about like what people with real jobs want out of their columnists. What they don't want is biased KU trash that you put out on a week by week basis. I mean, I'm sure you get a lot of shit from Mizzou, KU and K-State fans for being in Kansas City. We talk about this a lot in our family, but like fandom is like a sickness. Like being a fan of something it's like a sickness. Do you ever get like cynical or pessimistic about the whole world of sports and just like, you know, reading the comment section or whatever it is? Does it ever make you think like, man, this whole sports thing is wild, and maybe it's not the best thing for us all.
Probably, you know, in some dark moments I have some of those thoughts, for sure. You know, I don't, if you went into my Twitter and looked at like muted accounts, you know, it would be more than two or three, right? I don't know what the number would be, but I also think that like a lot of times people who do that stuff like don't even mean it. They're just messing around and, you know, entertaining themselves. Like, one of my best friends in the world, used to get on before Twitter, like kind of not before Facebook, but I remember he used to get on the newspaper comments and just find some random, like small town in freaking Iowa or whatever. And find a story about like a high school, like tennis tournament or whatever. Just get in the comments being like, why are they in the paper? Tennis isn't a real sport. You know, these, you know, weaklings need to play like football or whatever. And just like start just like, and that's how he got his kicks. And so I always think about that. I'm like, the other guy who just wrote this may be my buddy, Derek. Like he may be messing with me in this moment. So, but I do think like you mentioned like KU and Mizzou for sure. There's something, and look, like I'm not taking away the passion of like professional sports fans at all, but there is something deeply personal about your college rooting interests that doesn't exist, at least on the same level with professional teams. And I mean, there is no better way for me to have an inbox and Twitter mention that I'm just going to repeatedly roll my eyes at than to write something about like basically KU and Mizzou. And because anytime I write about KU, it's either, well, for the most part, it's either positive or negative, right? And if it's positive, screw you, you beaker idiot, like, you know, you went there, so whatever. if it's negative, it's, oh, you're just writing that so people don't think you're a beaker idiot. And then KU fans are pissed off, right? Because you went to school here, you know, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
And anything Mizzou is just like dead on arrival to some people. You know what I mean? And so I get it. But that, my point is that that does not exist with when I write about the Royals or the Chiefs. You know, it's more of a, you know, it may be a terrible column. It may be, I may be saying that Tyreek Hill is just a return specialist, right? But, you know, there's no like, you're just saying that because you hate the team, or you're just like defending them because you know, you're a homer or whatever. It's just, it's people, we can all like talk like adults a little bit more. Whereas like anything college, man, people get worked up on both sides, which is great. I always say like, it's great. I love it. Like my job literally would not exist. I would have to find a real job if people didn't feel that way about sports. So I'm like, that's not just something I say. Like I am legitimately like grateful for that. And I've developed, you know, I've had this job now, the column, for about, like 10 years, a little bit more. And I don't know at what point, but in the last half of that probably, I've finally developed the skin that I used to pretend I had, you know, where that stuff like legit just doesn't bother me.
Yeah. Go ahead, Danny.
I was going to ask, like, having tough skin, like, do you ever get into it with, like, say you write a column that's negative about a player or a coach. What does that look like the next day in the locker room? Like, are you getting shunned? Does it look like, you know, high school where it's like, oh, I'm not talking to that guy anymore? Or like, do our players and managers or coaches like more professional about it? Or what does it look like? I've always wondered that. Like,
yeah,
you know, a columnist writes a negative story and, you know, they don't get an interview the next time.
Well, you show up, right? Like that's the first thing. You show up the next day and you find out a lot, right? Like you find out a lot about people in those moments. And, you know, like some of them do shun, you know, I've been shunned, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes forever, sometimes for a day, sometimes for
Who shunned you forever?
Oh, Ned Yost used to shun me on the regular.
Really?
Yeah. And I got a lot of shunning, from Ned. But at some point, like, he got over it, you know, and it was all good. I text with Ned all the time now. So
on Verizon.
Right? Yes, yes. I guess we might both be on Verizon, actually. Yep. And then sometimes they're angry, and that's fine, too. Like, sometimes they need to cuss you out, and that's, you know, like, I always think, like, look, like, my job, it's a weird job. Like, so I don't play, right? And but I have this opinion that I'm going to write in the paper and online that a bunch of people are going to see. And I'm going to say whether this person who has dedicated their life to doing this thing is worth the job. And I get why that can piss you off, you know? And so I always think, like, I got to say that. So the least I can do is let them say whatever the hell they want to me, you know, and what I've found is almost without exception, not without exception, but almost without exception, you can say somebody had a terrible game, or you can say somebody's not good enough to be on this team, or you can say that was a stupid move, but you can't say that person's stupid. You know, you can't say, like, you know, there's a line that I think adults know. And so as long as you don't cross that, as long as you can criticize without being personal, then I think that's when people respect you the other way. I mean, there was a, you know, there was a baseball player, and you've been making fun of me for this. I'm going to do it one more time because this was all like an off the record thing, but it was one of the champagne parties in 2000, and I think it was 15 this time. And this, I was looking for somebody, I can't remember who, but this one player, like had a cigar and probably like his 12th Budweiser. And, he took the cigar and he just blew the smoke like straight in my face. And I was like, oh, hey. And he goes, I don't like you. And I was like, I know. And he's like, what? And I was like, I know. I was like, I don't know why. And we got into this whole thing. And, it was a pretty awkward conversation, you know, cause I'm on deadline and, dead sober. And, he is not on deadline and far from dead sober. And And the next day I saw him again in the clubhouse, and he said, my wife is making me apologize to you. I told her what we talked about. And this is a guy who really like never talked to me much at all before this. He was a great source for me after that. You know what I mean? So like sometimes you just, there's a back and forth that happens, and you know, if it's honest, it can, you know, it can improve the relationship.
I'm going to go look up players who were married during the 2015 run and see if I can do some backwards math. I did have kind of a Mellinger minutes type question that I wanted to ask you. I'm moving this weekend. Any advice, any do's or don'ts like around moving?
Jesus, man. Hire somebody.
I'm helping out.
Dan, so. You got hired. That. Yeah. Okay. Rule number one got broken.
Yeah.
Rule number two would be just throw away as much as you can.
Okay.
Right. Like, how long have you lived in your place?
Like about 2 years.
Okay. So you should be all right.
Yeah.
But there's going to be some stuff that's just, and I'm a hoarder. Like I'm not speaking, this is not me speaking from like a high moral ground, but, you know, my wife, she yells at me all the time about having like, you know, some t-shirt that's 12 years old. I'm like, but I like that t-shirt.
Yeah, you can't throw that t-shirt away.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, throw away as much as you can. If you're not hiring somebody, you're going to buy Danny a whole bunch of his favorite beer or whatever. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I did some quid pro quo with the other guys who are moving soon. I was like, you help me.
Oh, okay. I'll help you. That's legit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Except for Danny. He moved during the quarantine, and I acted like I was too scared to like have human contact at the time. Right. So yeah, like when safe. I had to ask him, I was like, oh, man, I probably should have helped him a couple of years ago.
He's moving in like right behind the peanut on Main. And so
hell yeah.
I imagine I can get paid. I can get paid in cheese fries and wings.
There you go.
What's your go-to order?
That's good spot. At the peanut?
Yeah.
Just wings, and then fries if I'm feeling like it. Although, I do think that like one of the best meals that you can possibly have is the triple BLT, three wings and fries. I mean,
pack it in.
You gotta come. Yeah. You gotta come correct for that.
I'm gonna disagree hard with you, Sam. I think the triple BLT is like one of those things you see on Instagram, and it's like a burger with like six patties on it. And it's like, you could never eat that. And
so you can,
but you got to deconstruct it. I just like the single BLT.
It's big. It's hard to.
Yeah. You can't put your mouth on it. So you're deconstructing it into two single BLTs anyways. So the key is to go with another person, split a BLT, split a half dozen wings, and then get an order of cheese fries on the side.
I'd rather have the more BLT and fewer like cheese, like just have my fries straight up. But yeah, the chili cheese fries, because that's real chili that they
use.
Stuff is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of going with three other people. So it's like a foursome. You get a dozen wings to split, and then two plates of cheesy fries. And I think that's the perfect amount of food. And a lot of times when you get a dozen wings, they accidentally throw a couple extra in there.
So, right?
Oh, yeah. There you go. It's good stuff. All right. I just want to end it talking about the peanut, Danny. Do you have any other questions? Thought that'd be a good spot.
Yeah, that's all I got. We had to get there at some point.
Yes,
yeah.
We did. So I'm excited to be close to that. So after the move, Danny, I will buy you some.
This is like your neighborhood bar now, the peanut.
Oh, yes. I'm so excited. Yeah. They got a new actual patio. We always call this the round table, the best patio in Kansas City when the doors open. Uh-huh. Totally. But now I saw they actually have a patio in that back parking lot. So that, nice. I can't wait. I'm excited. All right. Well, Sam, thank you so much for joining us, man. It's been a ton of fun. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for asking me. It was fun.
All right. Thanks again to Sam for joining us. Man, that was a ton of fun. Lots of cool stuff to talk about.
I know. It flew by. I really felt like we could have gone like another half hour easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was.
I'm glad we got to talk a little baseball. Glad we got to talk a little Kansas City. Give him shit for being a KU fan.
What a homer.
It was a good time.
What a freaking peaker. yeah, it was also, you know, nice to just kind of, see him let loose, because I really, only interact with him like on Twitter and in his columns. And he's, you know, he's a newspaper writer and he's a little old school in that sense. And so he's very polite on Twitter and very polite in his articles. And not that he wasn't polite, but it was cool to see him let down a little bit and just get to know him like as a person, not a columnist and a professional newspaper man.
Yeah. Awesome. So thanks again to Sam for joining us this week.
We need to make like our tweet about that, just like something really salacious, because we talked about clickbait. And so we need to make it like Mellinger rips Jason Whitlock for being a sellout. Mellinger rips former colleague Jason Whitlock for being a total sellout. That can be like the headline when we post it.
All right. So let's move in to a little people like us. Anytime we get a little love in Kansas or about Kansas City from a national media source or a celebrity, we like to talk about it. And this week we came across Jim Gaffigan talking Kansas City barbecue. Have you watched the clip? Because it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I love, like, his whole premise is basically like, old people in lines are miserable. Old fat people in lines are miserable. And all the old fat people in the Joe's KC line were giddy with excitement. So he knew that the barbecue had to be that good.
Yeah, that's a great bit. So he has like a YouTube series called Jim Eats the World or something like that. And if you know Jim Gaffigan, he talks a lot about being he talks a lot about being just like a fat, middle-aged white guy from Indiana. And so I think like basically every city he's going to, he's writing into his routine some jokes about that city's cuisine and then doing like a little bit of a segment afterwards and for his YouTube channel, and it's called Jim Eats the World. But yeah, that bit he does about like, you know, you just expect to see old fat people in line just complaining, and these people in Joe's can see like, wait, what? So what are you going to get?
What are you going to get? And then he actually eats the presidential platter from Gates, and then samples a couple other restaurants. But it's a cool video to check out, and I just enjoy that. He just knew he could talk about barbecue in that bit, and people would just cheer and go crazy.
Yeah. And he did it when he was in KC. But yeah. I, as we have to do, a couple corrections on Mr. Gaffigan that he needs to understand. He said Gates was one of the two big ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, I think there's like four big ones, five. Like, I think it's like Jack Stack, Gates,
Joe's,
and Arthur Bryant's. And then like Q39 has kind of jumped into that conversation, but it's at minimum four big ones. And then he said like Kansas Cityans are really territorial about their barbecue. I've never found that to be true. Like, I don't know anyone who's like, I really don't know anyone who's like, I only eat Gates and that's it. And every other barbecue stinks. Like, that's not true at all. Like,
yeah, Kansas I'm Cityans, more territorial with my sauce. I like wherever you want to go eat, I'm saying, you know, go eat and enjoy that. But I will debate you because Gates has the best sauce in the city.
Yeah.
And
if you like KC Masterpiece, like, I don't want to be friends with you.
Yeah.
If you like KC, if you have KC Masterpiece or if
Sweet Baby Rays,
if you have Sweet Baby Rays in your fridge, stop. Stop the podcast. Stop listening. We don't want you.
Dump it out.
And but he also got a couple things right. A true Kansas Cityan, the white Wonder Bread he ate the barbecue with. White Wonder Bread is spot on. So it's good to see that. And he didn't really like the burn-ins. I don't think he understood them. So we got that wrong. But overall, pretty solid review from Gaffigan on KC barbecue.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that is a little people like us. Next, we've got a Brittany Lynn post of the week. And it didn't need really any words. It just said, you, heart emoji. And it was a picture of her and Patrick. And Patrick is sucking down a silver bullet. And, I mean, just looking miraculous. Shirtless, having a beer. And I try so hard to be clever and funny and creative on Twitter to get some likes and some engagement. And I really do try. I posted this picture with just a very cliche caption. And I got like 250 likes. And I'm like, the Mahomes content machine is just unreal. I'm just going to only talk about Mahomes and post about Mahomes because that's all people want to see.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, man, it's like you spend 10 minutes working on a clever post on Twitter and then it gets like three likes. And it's like,
or like 30 minutes trying to, you know, make a video to post and tag someone on Twitter. And then it, like, six people watch it. And then I just post repost a picture that Brittany Lynn took and everyone is just like, just can't get enough of it.
Well, one, he looked good.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've said before, Pat and I have similar bod types. I'm just saying it. I'm not saying I'm Patrick Mahomes. I'm not saying Patrick and I look very similar with our shirts off, but I'm kind of saying that.
Yeah. I know. You've said it before. We put the side-by-side pictures up and
do it again.
Shockingly close.
Two.
There's just no laser rocket arm attached.
Well, I got a pretty good arm. I loved that he was drinking a Coors.
Yeah, I know. It made me want to drink a Coors Light. I don't like Coors Light, but it made me want to drink one. I mean, that's we'd have to ask Darren Revelle what that was worth to Coors Light.
Yeah.
That's what I should have done with that tweet. I should have tweeted it at Revelle and asked him how much it was worth to Coors Light.
Well, if you're
250
if you're
likes a, that I got, that was a lot.
If you're a Miller Lite drinker and you haven't switched to Coors yet, mm-hmm. then what's it going to take?
Yep. So that is the Brittany Lynn post of the week. And that'll take us into the mixed plate to wrap things up. Folks, it is summertime. It is getting hot out. We're starting to see temperatures that start with the number 9. So let's talk summer treats. Let's mm-hmm. talk the mixed plate of summer treats. What do we got? Episode 59 here. It's odd, like Oof. Danny. So Danny's going first. It's a lot of pressure.
Oh, it's pick. A lot of pressure. I'd rather uh-huh. be the second pick.
Mm.
All right. I know what I'm going with, though. It was the first thing I thought of. I actually had this last week. Sheridan's frozen custard.
Mm-hmm.
Folks. A little secret for you. Not done. Off menu item. Not on the menu.
Okay. All right.
It's called the Mount Rushmore. It is the best ice cream treat in the city. So
talk to me. What is it?
It's Mount Rush S'more.
Okay.
And so it's vanilla ice cream or vanilla custard. Sorry. Milk and eggs. Right? Eggs are in custard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so it's
weird.
Vanilla custard, and their plain vanilla custard is like out of this world good.
Mm-hmm.
With good. Graham crackers, the marshmallow fluff, and hot fudge.
Wow.
And it's not on the menu, but you walk up there, you order the Mount Rushmore, they know what you're talking about. And it doesn't matter what the cost is because you don't know what it is because it's not on the board out there. But it's so good. So that's my meat number one.
I'm a big dirt and worms guy at Sheridan's. Love the dirt and worms. Mm-hmm. I think that's usually my go to there. All right, I am going with summer treats because my mind went here because I was thinking a lot about baseball today, and I got a lemon chill at the K. I'm team lemon chill over frosty malts. Frosty malts gross me out, honestly, with the wooden spoon. And like it gives me the willies thinking about biting into that. Ugh.
Like scraping it on your teeth?
Oh, it gives me the willies, dude. Absolutely. But the lemon chill with a nice plastic spoon at the K. Oh, man. Just top notch. Nothing more refreshing. Yeah. Beautiful, delicious summer treat.
The worst thing is if you try to go in too soon and then you break your plastic spoon and you're like, shit, and you got to run up and get a new plastic spoon.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. I didn't even think about that. All right. Meat number two. I'm going with, and a lot of this was nostalgia because like I'm a 31-year-old and I don't get a lot of summer treats anymore. But I'm going with ice cream truck, cartoon shaped ice cream.
Oh, okay. That's
like
good.
There's something mm-hmm. different about the SpongeBob or the Mickey Mouse ice cream.
It's not just different. SpongeBob's, you know, he's a homosexual now. Let Nickelodeon.
Is?
Yeah. So easy on the calling out SpongeBob for being different. Okay.
Well,
easy
on that. Different and proud. Different and proud.
Exactly.
Who the hell thought SpongeBob needed a sexuality? I always thought he had a crush on Sandy.
I don't know.
He definitely had a crush on Sandy. Yeah. That time he was like trying to pretend like he didn't need water. Remember that mm-hmm. episode?
To impress her.
Yeah. And he's like, they do that zoom in on his face and he's like all dried out.
Water! Water!
That's a classic.
I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't need it. But yeah, I don't know. So, but yeah, SpongeBob is gay. So, and it's Pride Month. So go SpongeBob.
But ice cream truck, cartoon shaped ice cream. It just, it hits differently. Mm-hmm. You don't even need the gumballs. A lot of people rip on the gumballs and they're like, yeah, but the gumballs are too hard. Who cares?
Just throw them out.
Just spit them out. That mm-hmm. ice cream, it just hits differently.
It's good. It's very good. All right. Here we go. Meat number two on this mixed plate. this is, I'm between a couple. I'm going to go with tropical snow in Waldo.
Oh,
tropical snow. Like, because of how many different flavors they have that you can put in, you know, and you could just kind of create your own mix and match in all these flavors. It's a delicious summer treat. And I want to even say last time I was in there, I couldn't see on their menu, but I'm pretty sure you could put alcohol in it too.
I don't even know where it is.
It's over by Corner Cocktail, Walsh's Corner Cocktail, right? Tucked in there. Just a little shop. One thing I love about ice cream places or tropical snow, you could put ice cream with the – that's what I got last time. I had vanilla ice cream with snow cone on top of it and grape.
Ooh.
Oh, it was good. It was good.
I think they do like a stand out in Martin City too.
Mm, they might. But
I feel like I used
delicious.
To drive by it on my way to softball out there.
Yeah.
RIP.
Tropical snow. SNO. Yeah.
Snow.
Okay.
Delicious. But I love how cold ice cream shops is what I was going to say. How they keep the AC so cold.
Okay. All right. Side number one, mixed plate of summer treats. This isn't cold, but it just makes me think of summer. A soft pretzel from a concession stand at a pool.
Mm-hmm.
Like I love, like we never when we were little we would never get money when we went to the pool. Like we would never get to buy treats. But mm-hmm. sometimes when we would go with friends or like Chris Wank was working the concession stand that day. we would get some soft pretzels man, the soft pretzel at the pool with the cheese and you're kind of cold
With the 3 foot long, licorice.
Oh,
remember the super rope?
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Jeez.
Little pretzel and super rope action. Oh
yeah.
Man.
And, I remember like snorkeling with a super rope once. Like, because it was a tube.
Yeah.
And you could, like, go underwater and, like, snorkel with it. And then I would definitely still eat it.
Oh.
Soft pretzel. I mean, if you'll let me take concession stand snacks at a pool, I'll take them all. But, yeah, the soft pretzel with nacho cheese just knocked it out of the park.
Salt or no salt?
I used to be a no-salt kid, like, when I was a little kid. And then my palate matured, and I started to like salt.
Yeah, that's good.
Palate matured.
Yeah, I like salt on them too. All right, side number one here. I'm gonna also enter into the custard realm. Gotta go with Andy's frozen custard. My mouth is watering. That's why that happened. Because I'm sitting here looking at the James Brown funky jackhammer.
The number one.
It is so good. You got the custard.
It's like $8, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You got the custard blended with some peanut butter and brownies. And then what the jackhammer is they basically make a hole in the middle of the ice cream and jackhammer fudge in there. So
top it with a cherry.
Mm-hmm. I imagine there's like a little guy, like he's got a little jackhammer, like pumping fudge in there. And
it's like the little man on your beer on the rim of the glass. Mm-hmm. It's the little man, but with a jackhammer.
Just the combo of fudge, brownies, and peanut butter, and then that vanilla custard. Oh man, it is good. It is delicious.
I heard there's since it's been hot, there's like lines all the way down to the intersection of death.
Oh, in Westport?
Car lines in the Westport one down from the Andes to the to the intersection on Southwest Dragway.
Man, it's good.
Yeah, it is good. That's my go-to thing there as well. Our future brother-in-law gets vanilla custard with sprinkles.
That's it.
That's it. T-bone.
Come on, T-bone.
All right. Meat number two, my final. Again, I'm going nostalgia here. Freezer pops. You kidding me?
Yeah, that's good.
Or freezy ices? What are they called?
I call them freeze pops.
Freeze pops, yeah. The long...
Some people call them ices.
Ices,
Either
way, in the summer, like when we were little... Things.
Everyone's got a different name for it.
Yeah.
I called them freeze pops.
Yeah, I think I did. I mean, obviously. I would. Mom would just like... That was like the only thing. That was the only reason she had like a Sam's Club membership was just to go get freeze pops in bulk. Freeze pop. And I mean, we would just like... We would just crush them. Like when we were staying home from summer, just like four or five a day at a time. Did you hear Terry Francona is like team addicted
blue
to them?
Pop.
No. I was team purple.
Gross.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you. Everything that is purple and candy is flavored grape, right? But it doesn't actually taste like a grape.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it taste like?
Yeah. Purple flavor.
What do purple flavored things actually taste like?
Yeah.
That's, I don't know.
No, but
tastes like purple, I guess.
I heard Terry Francona, who for those of you who don't know, is a baseball manager. Is he still in the league?
Does he coach the Indians still?
I don't know.
It's been a while since.
But I heard he's like addicted to those freeze pops and like eats them all the time.
Oh man, what a weird thing to be addicted to. team blue or purple. I think light blue and purple.
Oh, I used to.
No, not purple. Pink. Sorry. Light blue and pink. Pink.
I used to get down on the lime green too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. Those were pretty good. All right, my meat number two, tasty summer treats, or side number two. Man, I'm gonna go with the root beer float. I mean, that's a top notch treat in the summer. Just to get an ice cold glass, put a couple scoops of ice cream, top it off with root beer. And it's just the best of both worlds. You get the creamy ice cream, you get the bubbles of a delicious root beer. And then by the end of it, the ice cream has melted and you just have this delicious vanilla tasting root beer. Oh, some of the best treat right there.
I get triggered by root beer floats.
Well, you don't like them?
No, that one time we went to Dairy Queen when we were little.
Oh, yeah.
And I ordered a root beer float from the Dairy Queen, and I like leaned up. I was real little. I leaned up on the counter to see if they actually just put like fountain root beer in the root beer floats. And I slipped. Like I had my palms up on the counter, and I slipped, fell, hit my chin, and nearly bit my tongue off.
Mm-hmm. I remember that now because there's blood everywhere at the Dairy Queen.
My tongue was just like hanging.
We were probably coming from Health Plus
or a Nahal's baseball game.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What would you leave off the list?
Bomb pops. Love bomb pops.
Happy hour at Sonic, a slush.
Yeah.
Little happy hour slush.
Schwan Man drumsticks.
The Schwan Man, yes.
I saw the Schwan Man
I did truck
the other day. It's still out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ice cream sandwich from Betty Ray's. The only thing I was like, man, I love those, but sometimes it's hard to eat in the summer when things start melting. They get a little messy and crazy, but I do love their ice cream sandwiches.
Here's a question. I like the cheap-ass ice cream sandwiches. Mm-hmm. What is that made out of? Like what?
They're like chocolate.
Is it supposed? Is it? Yeah. Is it? Yeah. I don't even know if it's supposed to be chocolate.
I mean, it's. I think it's supposed to be chocolate flavored.
I have no clue what that's made out of, but I love those like I think, really cheap ice cream sandwiches.
Cardboard and chocolate extract, I think. And it's just like a paper mache type mix.
Yeah. I have cold Snickers.
Oh, yeah.
Put a Snickers bar.
Snickers out of a freezer.
Fridge or freezer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty good. I had dirt and worms. I talked about that. I mean, I just had a Crispy Boy.
Yeah.
Ice cold Crispy Boy. That's a little treat.
I
went mostly street or sweet and not savory though today. So didn't have that on the list, but that was it. Lots of good ones. Lots of good ones to choose from. I'm glad we both agree on that frosty melts suck.
Oh, I didn't agree on that.
Did you just agree that the spoon sucks?
I don't have a problem with it.
Okay. Well, would you rather have a frosty malt or a lemon
chill? No, I'd rather have a lemon chill, but okay. I like frosty malts.
I wonder what other people call those. I don't know if lemon chill is the official name, but that's what I call them. All right. So that's it for the mixed plate and for the episode this week. Again, we are nominated for best local podcast in Kansas City. So, go to kansascitymagazine.com and you can vote for the best of Kansas City. We're under like politics and news and media is where you can find the best local podcast. Anything else?
Nope.
All right. So that'll do it for us this week. Be sure to follow us on social media @StateYourLine. We'll see you around Kansas City.